One, two, three, four. Get your woman on the floor. Gotta get up to get down. Gotta get
Julio,
up to get down.
Get the stretch.
I'm on the floor.
Aaron?
I'm on the floor.
Oh, no, Aaron?
She got left on the floor.
Aaron, you gotta get up.
No,
Aaron,
Julio, stretch her out. No, not until Julio stretches her.
Ew!
Do you think the artist who sings that song is named Julio from the Bruno Mars music videos?
Julio, get the stretch.
Actually, if you go back through history, Julio's not just present in that Bruno Mars music video. He's present through all music videos.
He's in the schoolyard.
He killed Kennedy.
Guess who's back? If you've got money to spend, another show from the street, yo, of tenuous friends. I don't know. If it were me, I'd probably throw the towel in, but hell, I guess they'll try it again and again. Here's the general concept of what they will do. Ooh, they find a piece of media they want to review. Ooh, provided that it ties into the riddle purview. Ooh, so now it's time for Hey Riddle Riddles Review Crew.
Okay, 24 karat.
Well, Eldorado.
What? 24 karat. Let's pretend this is $10,000 pyramid. 24 karat, malleable, yellow. Digger. Watch.
Kanye West.
No. Yeah. Watch. Sweat into
watch
the.
Watch the throne. Kanye West.
No. Medallion. First place. Olympics.
I'm gonna let you finish. But Beyonce has the best album of all time.
Yeah,
Kanye West.
That's very generous of you in bed, JPC. I'm gonna let you finish. Gold. We are in the search for gold,
guys. Who am I? I like gold.
Kanye West.
Lauren Michaels.
Kanye West. No, that's Kanye West. I was Kanye West.
We're in the search for gold, and so in hopes of finding it, we are biting into the DreamWorks movie that is The Road to El Dorado. I assume that's a play on like the what is it, Bob Hope and the other guy? They would do those like The Road to Rio and all those like travel buddy movies.
I believe that is what that is in reference to.
Hey guys, what was this?
Well, Aaron, hold on. So, pump the horse brakes.
Did we dream this movie into existence? Is it possible that that's something that we did?
Yeah, I guess that's the big question here.
Jeffrey Katzenberger has come out to announce and to say, almost in like a Minority Report way with the precogs, every DreamWorks film is created by the collective unconscious of the world. So that's why it's called DreamWorks. So somehow this is 8.5 billion people all in unison dreaming about something, and so they just made that a movie.
So obviously this movie has a lot of problems, but the biggest problem it faced in terms of us remembering what it is it came out in the year 2000, which is the same year Emperor's New Groove came out.
Ooh.
Like very shortly together. And those movies have a very similar vibe, color scheme, whole sort of essence, and we decided to just remember one until 20 years passed.
Is Emperor's New Groove, because I don't think I've seen that, I think I saw that in theaters when it came out, and I haven't seen it since. Is Emperor's New Groove set, isn't that set in like Aztec?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
It's John Goodman and David Spade.
That's right.
And Eartha Kitt. And
right.
It is excellent and really, really funny. And like, I think still worth the watch.
Is it DreamWorks?
This is not that. No, it's Disney.
No, it's Disney. Disney. Okay.
So this is like an Ants Bugs Life situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well,
wait, what's the name of that sociopath who left Disney?
JPC?
No. Well, yeah.
Walt Disney?
Yeah, Walt Disney. No, what is his name?
Tim Cook? Sociopath who left Disney. Michael
Tim
Eisner?
Tim Cook.
Aaron, you could be mentioned. That could be any upper echelon at Disney. Okay. While Aaron's thinking of that, you all voted. I think this is because I think we put it on the poll because somebody mentioned it in the episode we did with Dan and Ryan from Teacher's Lounge, from Big Grande, from Man Now Dog Pod. And I had mentioned I had no idea this was a movie. I didn't know what it was about. Had you two seen it before or no?
Yeah, so upon rewatch, some memories came flooding back. I do definitely remember the two like main characters in this movie. Mm-hmm. I must have seen it, but I mean, this is 2000, so I'm 12 when it came out, 11 or 12 when it came out. So like, if I saw it, I probably saw it like in theaters or shortly after. Well, this didn't do well, so I don't think it maybe got a very big like video release. So I must have seen this in theaters. So I definitely have seen it one time when I was young. I must have.
I read that this was the, I don't know if it's the only, but it was the first DreamWorks movie to lose money. Aaron, had you seen this movie before?
I think so. I don't know. It didn't stick in my brain, and I have a pretty good memory. It's Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Oh, okay.
He was at Disney. He left, and he is a true narcissist sociopath, and he was really, really shitty to his animators for a really long time and sort of insisted they like finish projects way too quickly with not enough resources or money, and that he wanted Ants to come out before Bug's Life because he like wanted to get revenge on Disney.
And how'd that work out?
Not great. But then he wanted to get revenge on Disney, so he hired Eddie Murphy, who had just starred in Mulan, to be another animal sidekick in Shrek. And that worked out a lot better for him.
Well, it's interesting to me that both of you probably saw this movie but have no recollection of it, like it's a waking nightmare. So many people who voted for this movie, I believe so. I don't want to put words in the comment section, but I feel like a lot of people said that this is one of their favorite animated movies. I feel like a lot of people love the music in this. So we'll move forward with that in mind.
Wait a second. Wait a second. No one could possibly have loved the music in this.
I
thought this was going to be like a straight up musical. And it was like, I think at like minute 28, there's the first song and it's just like Elton John singing. And I'm like, nobody in the movie's gonna sing.
Felt like just like that first song was just like Elton John, like free associating. Like it was just all lyrics.
The opening credit song.
I mean, nothing like rhymed. It didn't. It was just like it felt like he wrote it in an afternoon when he was thinking about something else. Like it felt. I don't know. It felt easy. Like Hans Zimmer did the score for this one. I kind of think like Hans Zimmer does the score for everything. I think he's worked on every movie that's come out in the last 50 years. But do you think that he ever is like, why don't we just call me like Zons Himmer on this one? Why don't we not? Let's like not make this one like an official part of my
like,
canon.
As a fun joke, let's just change my name on this one. That first Elton John song, it sounds like a truck commercial ad. It sounds like a Chevy Eldorado.
Yes, like, it really does.
Eldorado. It sounds like a full Southern people. Like,
it's like the Simpsons Silver Arrow commercial or Canyon Arrow. Canyon Arrow.
I watched this yesterday and I was driving with Sean and I was mentioning that this was the movie we were doing for Review Crew. And he said, Aaron, do you know that there's a full sex scene in that movie? And I said, there's a what? And he said, there's a full sex scene in that movie. And I was like, Sean, I'm not gullible. And he's like, no, in my memory, there is one. And then the whole time I was sort of being like, there can't be. And then about halfway through, I was like, yeah, probably. I'm sure it's going to, all signs point to the fact that there's going to be a full blown pornographic scene.
Number one note with a bullet. This is the horniest fucking animated movie, even topping like Cool World. This is the horniest animated fucking movie I've ever seen in my life.
Why did I see so much butt in this? I guess is my number one question. JPC,
they were naked. They were naked a lot in this, a lot. Well, here's the other thing. This movie's PG, and this is the toned down version of kids like that came out. The original like concept of this movie was for it to be PG-13 and for it to be like a lot hornier. Chell? Rosie Perez's character? Yeah, Chell. Mm-hmm. Chell's clothes or like a costume is like toned down. The original plan for Chell's costume was like more like revealing or sexual, I guess, and this movie was supposed to be PG-13 that was like supposed to be like a little treat for daddy.
This is the horniest movie I've ever seen, and I've seen porn. What was the non-toned down version of that? That's crazy.
Because there is kind of a sex scene in this movie, but they don't really show anything. Like, Chell is kind of like, hey, your friend's off, like, you know, twiddling his thumbs. You want to, like, fuck in this mansion? And the guy's like, yeah.
But you see his face at the end. He fully comes.
If you're big porn and you're listening, drop the pizza man routine, drop the repair man, start having two guys show up to a mystical ancient city looking for gold, and then just like plowing the everyone.
Aaron, I'm glad that you brought up how sexual this is, because this leads me to a joke that I wrote down. I have a half page of notes, so it's literally the least amount of notes I've ever taken for a review crew movie, but I have a half page of notes, and this is one of them. They cast Jim Cummings as Hermann Cortez. Seems like he would have been better in the Miguel role, because that's the one that was doing all of the Cummings.
I actually looked up.
Wow, did you get a nice big bowl of ice cream after that as a treat?
My stomach feels awful.
As soon as Cortez talked, rushes of childhood memory came washing over me, and I was like, how do I know this voice? And I looked up this dude. And Jim Cummings has done every voice in every animated movie. And most importantly, he's Darkwing Duck. And a lot of the Darkwing Duck villains. So I was like, how do I know this voice? He's Darkwing Duck. He's Winnie the Pooh. He's like every single character. Jim Cummings is our childhood. His voice is everyone's childhood.
Yeah.
It's
what
insane.
A career.
Go on IMDb and look up Jim's. I'm sure many people are like, yeah, duh, Adel. But if you haven't heard of
I guess we're getting ahead of ourselves. We're talking all about this movie, but we could kind of start from the start and just go from there. It's an 89-minute movie, so there's not a lot for us to really sink our teeth into, thank God. But we can talk about it. So the movie centers on these two characters, Miguel and Tulio. And I know what you're thinking. These are 16th century Spaniards' names, so what kind
Tulio,
of...
Tulio,
like,
get the truck.
What kind of... Miguel and Tulio, what kind of actors do we have playing these 16th century Spaniards?
I got it. Let's get one British guy, Kenneth Branagh, and then the American version of Kenneth Branagh, Kevin Klein, to do the other voice. Cut, print, white savior movie, and we're done.
I didn't know... I had to look it up. Eventually, I think I would have gotten Kenneth Branagh and Kevin Klein, but the very first scene in the movie where we're introduced to Miguel and Tulio, I thought it was the same person doing different accents as each person, and I thought it was Kevin Klein doing both, but one of them kind of sounded like off-brand, and then later on, he like fully has a British accent, and I was like, oh, that's just
Costco
Kenneth Branagh.
Costco brand Kevin Klein.
Kirkland Branagh.
Kirkland Klein. I will say Kevin Klein is one of my favorite actors. I feel like he doesn't do a ton. Like, I know he does like Bob's Burgers, and a Fish Called Wanda is like one of the best comedies of all time. I haven't seen
Wild Wild West.
Hopefully it holds up. I've never seen that.
Whoa.
But I feel like this guy is amazing, and he rarely pops up. So when I saw it was him and Kenneth Branagh, that's got to be the biggest powerhouse acting duo for like an animated film, right? Because usually it's like comedians or like goofy B celebrities,
right?
Like David Spade.
When you think of buddy comedy, you gotta have like one goofball. You gotta have like a David Spade, and then a John Goodman. And this, they were like, let's just have two excellent actors be both. It made no sense to me.
Yeah.
I was very impressed
with the pedigree. Oh, JPC, you okay?
You've never seen Wild Wild West?
I've seen the music video starring one William Smith.
All right, start over.
Both of them are in that, right?
Yes. Well, you've had... Okay, God damn it. He's never seen Wild... Okay. I guess I'll just have to give you the brief rundown. So, okay. Once upon a time in the West, a madman lost his damn mind in the West. Loveless, kidnap a dime, nothing less. Now I must put his behind to the test... Then through the shadows and the saddles, ready for battle. Bring all your boys in. Here comes the poison. Behind my back, all the riding you did.
Wiki, front and center. Hold on.
Now where you
lip
at, kid? Who that is?
Wiki.
I mean, brother, bad for your health. Looking damn good, though, if I can say it myself. I told you. Told me Loveless is a madman, but I don't hear that.
Here
he got mad weapons, too.
And
trying to fear that.
What you do remember?
Trying to bring me down, the champion?
Nah.
When all y'all clouds gonna realize it can't be done. Understand me, son. I'm the slickest they is. I'm the quickest they is. Did I say I'm the slickest they is? So if you're barking up the wrong tree, we coming. Don't start nothing.
I'm Benino. Ami, ami.
Me and my partner gonna test your chest, Loveless. Can't stand the heat. Then get out the wild, 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 wild west.
I just realized if you overlay every single Will Smith song, it's the exact same song.
Wow, you two really don't have anything to say about The Road to El Dorado, do you?
Here's the number one thing I want to say. This is Adel's inside corner. This movie made me realize something that that's been right in front of my fucking face for years and years and years and years. Every single animated movie has two animals in it. One animal is the goofy, wisecracking dum-dum, and the other animal is the haughty horse. And when I say haughty, I mean H-A-U-G-H-T-Y, or disdainful horse.
Yeah,
or,
say disdainful horse.
who only does stuff for food. Think about every animated film with a horse. They don't talk. The horses never talk. And they're always too proud or disdainful or haughty. And then they always are like won over by food. And then there's also the dum-dum character who can talk, but they're an idiot and they crack wise.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't have one of these movies without, like, magical human-like animals. Like, that. Yeah. They just have to exist in this universe.
Okay, but so I'm a Disney princess. Which one of you is the horse and which one of you is the wisecracking small animal?
Come on, which one of you is the horse? That's an easy question. It's obviously
No, I didn't say which one of you is the police horse.
I'm the fuckable horse, and JVC's the wisecracking armadillo.
Yeah, I feel like Entangled, there's that horse.
Yeah.
And then in...
And Moana has the horse that's a chicken.
Yep, one has a, but the reindeer in Frozen has a horse personality, but is a reindeer.
And all those movies, there's always a moment where the horse goes, and like puts its head back, like it's incredulous, and like and blows air out of its mouth upward. Every single there's 25 animated movies that have that moment. I hate it. I saw the Matrix. I saw the ones and zeros while watching this, and now I can fucking predict every single animated movie.
Well, the ones and zeros are all over this movie, but when we start out, this movie has a fucking trippy opening. Like, this opening, it's like lots of bright colors. They flash by very quickly, and I was like, oh, God. And then the rest of the movie, like, that comes back a little bit, but that's not really the color palette of the movie. It's just, like, interspersed with these, like, bright flashing colors.
It would be cool if it was like an ayahuasca trip. Like, it would be cool if every once in a while the movie just went into that opening style. Because
yeah, people's faces just started melting off, and we just did that for a while. That'd be cool.
I will say one boon for this movie was the animation. It's from 2000. Feels way ahead of its time. There's moments where they're in water that look incredible. There's several moments where I was like, holy shit, the animation is outstanding.
Well, I thought it was a little disjointed, though, because there'd be some things that clearly a computer did.
Yeah.
And it would be like, what? Ow, ow. So it definitely wasn't as seamless. But yeah, they were able to accomplish some cool stuff. And I didn't hate the color palette for most of the movie.
I didn't either, but it was not what the opening like promised. I felt like I was just promised something different in the opening than what I got in the movie. But I'll also say about the animation, because I took specific note of this as well. There are Disney movies like Lion King and Aladdin where the animation looks classic and it has that classic feel. Then there are things like this movie where it's kind of like got a mixture of classic animation and then they try to do like this like 3D computer animation shit in this movie. And what it gives you in total is like a movie that doesn't really feel like a 3D movie, but it doesn't feel like a classically animated movie. It just feels very like dated to a certain time frame. Because it's like if I watch, you know, if I watch The Lion King, I could get disappeared and like where was this movie? This could have been a current movie that they just drew in this like older style, but this feels very much like early 2000s, and I didn't like that. I felt like the animation style in this movie was putting it in a time that I wasn't like interested in.
I agree. It wasn't like seamless, but I truly wasn't. It was like the Beauty and the Beast ballroom moment where there were several like specifically in water moments where I was like, oh, this is really cool what they're able to do. Knowing it was from 2000, I was like, this is very impressive.
I know that those hand-drawn classic ones take so long, and Disney and other animation studios just want money and to produce these things quickly. But that's why it's so cool when they made Princess and the Frog, because they fully hand-drew it like it was one of the old ones. And I feel like it doesn't date Princess and the Frog at all.
Yeah, that makes it that I actually like. I like it when they make that like intentional choice to do something like this. This movie also had its, I think its budget got cut because they pulled animators off of this to go work on The Prince of Egypt, I believe. Is that another DreamWorks
movie?
It's
another one I've never seen.
Apparently that's what happened. Like this one, a lot of like animators got pulled off of this to go work on that other one, so they lost resources. Also, I read that they like sent some producers and animators to go look to the Mayan ruins in Mexico so they could get a better idea of like what the ruins looked like.
Yeah,
like,
nailed it. It's very surely very culturally appropriate. The whole
surely
place.
That was just a fucking business trip. Like, yeah, we're gonna do a movie. What are we gonna do? A movie Mexico? Yeah. What are we thinking? Playa del Carmen in like February? Why not? Like, let's
be drunk the whole time and not take a single photo.
Do you guys see the senior frogs in the background?
I saw Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville. Yeah.
JBC, animators got pulled off of this movie, and so did Tullio.
He definitely got pulled off.
So this starts and has a very like Aladdin, Flynn Rider feel where it's like, oh, don't we love these charming criminals? Unbelievable. they do a sword fight to get out of trouble. They fight each other. And then they go onto a boat where I wrote, look how little his butt is, about Kenneth Branagh's animated butt.
Here's my thing about that opening, though. Isn't that just like a carbon copy of Aladdin? Didn't we just watch the opening to Aladdin? It was like that, but they didn't sing.
It was like that, but they didn't sing. And then also, I looked down at my phone. It was 24 and a half minutes into the movie, and I was like, oh my God, I don't know anything about these two. I'm not rooting for them. I don't know what's going on. Like, and to be fair, I was also like checking in and out because I was kind of tired. But it just felt like there was you didn't get a full sense of their backstory or anything. It's just like right away, they're in trouble. They're thieves. They get out of it. They fall into barrels. And then suddenly they're on this boat and they're in the, I don't know. It moves so fast. And I felt like I didn't give a shit about them the entire way through.
I mean, they get to Dorado like 20 minutes into the fucking movie. It's like, I thought this movie was the road to El Dorado and they're there immediately. But also, yeah, the thing that we see them at the very beginning is they're like fleecing some like dock workers and like, you know, like working class ship people to like steal their money with Way to Die. And I'm like, I guess these are the heroes of this movie? It did not make me want to root for them. And then later when they're like, no, here's their stated objective. They want to steal native wealth. Like, that's what they're all about.
Oh,
I'm like,
way better.
Are
these heroes?
And also teach them less barbaric ways.
So, oh, yeah.
And invent basketball.
Adel, you're also forgetting, fuck their women.
Oh, yeah. And then condescendingly make fun of their culture and take advantage of them. My favorite part is heroes. When he found an instrument and said, here, I'll make it better.
No more of this two-string bullshit. Yeah.
Fuck this movie. Any hoodle. Then Elton John starts to sing while they're on the island.
Another
big old fuck you because he did Lion King.
And he truly cashed his check on this one. Like this one... Well, I'm going to look up the lyrics here.
And I think Tim Rice worked with him as well, right? I think it's that old classic duo.
You guys know that I have such a bad ear for lyrics, but I can remember melodies pretty easily. I couldn't, if you gave me $100,000 to hum something from that movie, I would say I'm going to be poor forever because no way, no way. All I know is El Dorado.
Let's each take a stab at what we think was a chunk of a song from El Dorado. I can't remember any either, but I'm gonna take a stab at it.
Okay, go.
El Dorado, there's gold in them hills, and the people all will worship you like the gods that you are. El Dorado, get a kiss upon your neck. Ooh, you're gonna get fucked by the women, El Dorado. Cha!
Okay, perfect. That's probably it. In case that wasn't it, here's mine. El Dorado, rocks and waterfalls, tiny man butts, rocks and waterfalls, more butts, gold white saviors, El Dorado. I wrote this in a night. El Dorado.
Okay, this is my attempt. Changing legend into fact, we shall ride into history, turning myth into truth. We shall surely gaze on the sweet unfolding of an antique mystery. All will be revealed on the trail we blaze.
America, I don't know if
that was not the melody, but those are the lyrics to the
fantastic.
You guys talk amongst yourselves. I'm going to quickly look up how it actually sounds.
The lyrics in every one of these songs, like every single one of these songs, was forgettable. Like nothing. There was no like fun hooks. There was no fun refrains. There was nothing. There was no energy. Like the syllabically, they were like so complex. Like it was just like writing like a fucking story in each one of these songs. And what? And also, I don't think anyone had fun with them. Like no one had fun singing them.
Here's where you and I part ways, because I do think there was a refrain. I think the songwriters refrained from having a good time.
Do you remember It's Tough to Be a God, a duet with Randy Newman? That's it. Yeah. Here.
Okay, and now I have to do this. Here's what I think that went like. It's tough to be a god. It's tough to be a god.
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing basketball and it's 2 versus 10 and you're not very tall and an armadillo crawling up the wall, it's hard to be a god.
Adel, just sneeze. You have to sneeze. Just sneeze.
What about this one? Do you guys remember Friends Never Say Goodbye featuring the Backstreet Boys? I actually do remember that one.
That can't possibly be true.
Do you guys remember Without Question featuring Don Henley? Everybody had a little slice of this movie. Everybody got a taste.
Everybody
made a little bit of money on this
movie.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
This album reads like a Ponzi scheme.
This is how it goes. In El Dorado. And then it goes, let's see.
Oh, I remember this.
El Dorado.
Why don't you stick to your
1,000 years ago. Whatever, he got paid.
yeah. I mean, I think it is actually harder to write one of these animated movies when you're Elton John, writing songs that don't have any sort of like traction or sticking. I think like you have to kind of go out of your way to write bad songs.
And you're just getting over Princess Di.
Mm-hmm.
She died in like 96. Like,
oh, yeah.
He kept sitting down to write a song, and he just goes like, and it seems to me, damn it, she lived a life. Fuck, okay. El Dorado.
And then he saw a coffee commercial and was like, I'm good. Ready.
Like two guy butts in the wind. Fuck.
I will say one redeeming quality for this movie for me, besides the cool, I feel cool animation sequences. The banter between the two leads, I thought was pretty cool. There's a few moments, like there's a moment where they're all in the boat and they come upon El Dorado for the first time, and both the two lead guys and the horse mouth the words El Dorado, and I was like, you know what? Good moment. And then later on, and I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but there's a moment where a guy's like a monster stomping around and it stomps right near the guy and he goes, I'm okay. And then the monster absolutely crushes the guy and you know he's like liquefied and he goes, I'm still okay.
I like that I'm still okay moment. Like that was funny.
There's few moments. Yeah, there was like 8 to 10 moments where I was like, this is genuinely good banter. And whoever punched this up is like legit great.
So I'll also say, I don't know how true this is, but I did read when I was, you know, reading about this movie that Kevin Kline and Kenneth Branagh, they recorded their audio together. All of their like dialogue, they were in the studio together so that they could also just riff off of each other and like improvise things. And then they said that some of that made it into the movie, like into the final cut of the movie.
Oh,
and
that's awesome.
I really liked Kevin Kline and Kenneth Branagh's like chemistry. I can't tell you what they shouldn't have been in this movie. Like, I don't know why they were in this movie together, but I thought that they played really well with each other. I thought that was a fun dynamic. I didn't like what they were doing.
My favorite joke in the movie is when they pop out of the buckets on like that pirate ship, and to sort of save face, I think Kevin Kline goes, who ordered the pickles?
Yeah, that was a fantastic
moment.
That made
no sense, but I loved it.
Fantastic moment.
I think that may have been, that feels like an ad lib. That feels like a Kevin Kline
100%.
Ad lib. Yeah. I have a question for you guys. So the plot of the movie that Aaron has described so far, whatever, they get shipwrecked. They find their way to this island with Cortez's horse, who they've stolen and befriended with an apple. And the Elton John song plays, and they find El Dorado. And then they find Chell, which is Rosie Perez's character, who is escaping the guards of El Dorado because she has stolen some gold. And then they like run into each other, and then they all get taken to the palace. Now, Rosie Perez is one of them. She is of that tribe, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
of those people. And those people, like, what is she going to do with that fucking gold? Like,
well, they were also, they were about to kill 20 people because they lost in a game of basketball. So I think this society, the way they portray it is like, you get killed for doing anything. So I think she, I think what they were trying to portray is like, she's more, I don't want to say evolved, but she's like above their brutal ways. And so I think she was stealing gold to take off and start a new life somewhere.
Yeah,
what
but
I,
you
what
know
I read.
When a small town girl just dreams of the big city?
You know
hold
El Dorado
on, hold
band
on.
Dancing? So
hold
she
on.
Was...
it's the 16th century. Cortez has not come here yet. So like there, we don't, there's no other people. It's just her. That gold, there's no market. You can't trade that gold for anything. Like the gold is not like
sure
a precious value. What?
She's
no.
a small town girl who's dreaming of the big city.
Hold on, JPC, you're telling me that in this era, gold is not valuable?
No, he's saying
not
she doesn't know
people.
The rest of the world exists.
There's no capitalism. There's no mercantilism. There's no market for
then
gold.
Then why exist if there's no capitalism is, I guess, my question. What's
I'm
the point?
Saying, what is her motivation for taking that? She's like, taking it to do what? She doesn't know that Spain exists.
Okay.
She can't go to Spain.
Well, I'm sorry. Maybe that piece of gold was her mom. I don't know. Maybe it's a genie. Maybe it's a lamp with a genie in it, and it's a crossover.
It just also there was also a moment where they meet all of the people from El Dorado, and they're Spaniards, remember, who speak English, and then they just start speaking English, and then the tribes people also speak English. I was like, oh, we're not even trying at this point. We're just like
no.
we're like be, everybody speaks English. It's all English. It, don't worry about it.
It would be phenomenal if they made an animated kids musical where they arrive at some island and the entire movie is them being like, I don't know what they're saying. We can't get through to them. And it's just like a 6-hour docu-pic where they're just like, we're going to try and teach them. It's not really working. And then they just leave.
The way that it happened, though, was they didn't speak to anyone until they got into the city, even though there were those other people around. Like, why didn't they just immediately use language? Otherwise, it made me think like, oh, do they not speak the same language? Because when the guards find them, they could have been like, hey, we're taking you into this, you know, something like that. I don't know. It felt weird that no one said a word to them until they got inside. And then they were
so
like,
confusing.
Hey, my name's Chris. Welcome to El Dorado. what can we do?
Weird.
What can we do?
Hey,
feels
I'm
weird
Kyle.
To me.
If either of you want a strawberry margarita or Gatorade, let me know.
It feels weird to me that we're glossing over the fact that they skinny dipped and then monkeys ran off with their underwear. And then
oh,
they
I've been talking about dude butts this whole time, my guy. What
nakedly,
do you mean I skipped over it?
They nakedly chase monkeys all
their
throughout the
place. Their butts are so small, I can fit them in my hands. Both butts in one hand.
I don't actually remember.
That's a new shirt. Both butts in one hand.
Were their underwear, or was it just their like shirts and pants? Because
that's fair.
The only
that's
thing fair. I saw was their shirts and pants, and I thought, like, these guys are wearing just flowing-ass shirts and pants.
Well, that's.
What?
I don't think there is underwear because later they're getting changed and their dicks are out, and Rosie Perez is watching them. She's watching both their dicks, and then they go, "Do you mind?" And she goes, "No," while like licking her lips, and then they're like, "Can you not like gaze upon our dongs?" And she's like, "Oh, cool." Then she goes behind a curtain, and then she pulls open the curtain to get one final glance at those dongs. What? This is
I
the
think
horniest
she was
fucking
looking
movie.
At their small butts that you can fit two butts in one end.
I love that they're like on the ends of voices. On one end is Kenneth Branagh, and on the other end is Rosie Perez. Like
the
two most opposite voices in the entire world.
Well, I love Rosie Perez's voice.
It's interesting in that scene too because Rosie Perez. I'm gonna stop saying Rosie Perez. Chell's obviously taking a look at some of that dong, right? She obviously is looking.
You don't
at
want
dong.
That soundbite to exist, JPC.
I don't want to be mean to Rosie Perez because it's Chell. Chell is doing this, and then. She decides that she wants to fuck one of these guys, right? She don't go after the other one. She goes after the Kevin Klein one.
Yeah.
Now, I'm assuming that means after seeing both, I don't want to say bigger.
She measured. She visually
say,
measured.
I just want to say Kevin Klein's character obviously has a nicer.
It's
like,
not the size of a dong. It's how small the butt is, JPC.
She's like, small butt, perfect size dong. That's the one I'm going for.
Yeah, when I meet two guy best friends, I go, give me 20 minutes and then I'll decide which one of you I'm going to kiss. Oh, God. So stupid. Remember when the volcano burped?
Yeah, that was fun.
It erupted, well, and then it sucked it back in.
Did they explain what
flat.
That was?
No.
Did they ever explain that? Okay.
They didn't.
Here's something we haven't talked about that I want to talk about, but I'm also, I don't know how to articulate it.
Oh, hell yeah. I can't wait to get Adel canceled over this.
The main villain is so terrifying because his nose starts above his forehead. Like, he can smell his eyes. His nose starts above his forehead and is this rocky terrain all the way down towards his mouth.
Okay.
And every time he talks, his head is tilted back at like a 90-degree angle. So he looks like the little girl from Exorcist walking down the stairs. Like, that's how he talks normally day to day.
I almost made it through a whole day without thinking about the movie The Exorcist. Goddamn. I got to reset
This is the most
terrifying. Okay, now,
this is the most terrifying.
So this
animated villain ever.
This is interesting, Adel. So we're going to give you some room to talk this through. So go ahead and explain your theory about why people with big noses are villains to you. Go ahead and explain that.
Yeah,
why that's terrifying to you.
No.
And you have the floor. You have the floor. Go ahead.
I didn't say. I'm saying people whose noses start at their hairline.
Okay.
Are terrifying.
Good. So.
Oh, and they control Hollywood and the media? What did you say about
that? I didn't say that.
Okay,
Oh, God. Oh, God.
We got it. We have to remember that, you know, Adel is Middle Eastern, and this is...
and we have big noses.
He's got stuff to sort out on his head.
My dad's got a big old honker.
Okay.
And so do I.
Let's not bring everyone's dad into this now, Adel. No, I want to talk about that guy, too, because that dude is so fucking evil that the only thing he cares about is doing sacrifices. And when they're like, oh, actually, bro, we're not going to do sacrifices, he's like, no, fuck you. Like,
yeah.
I didn't become the priest so I could not do sacrifices. But then I was like, what is this guy's whole motivation? And all I could think of is he's a fucking sociopath who just loves doing sacrifices. Because otherwise, these are his gods.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
If everyone else believes that there is gods and he's the priest and the gods are like, we don't do sacrifices anymore, he'd be like, okay, cool. Let's just do whatever the gods say. From like, they're the gods. But no, this guy's just like, I want to fucking kill.
From what I could tell, his only motivation was to see if he could smile from ear to ear for 80 years straight. All that guy did was smile real big.
Yeah. I like my Disney villains a little bit more, or animated villains, a little bit more complicated than this guy. This guy truly was just like, I like killing people. Don't make me stop. There's always one guy in every friend group who just wants to murder people.
Yeah, like you have like Scar and the Lion King. Like, at least I knew what Scar was all about. He wanted to be king. This guy doesn't want to be the leader. He just like wants to do the sacrifices. Like, he just wants to kill people and like have blood. And then layering that on like this movie where I'm like, what are you saying about this culture that like that the Mayans or Aztecs or whatever this culture was?
Eldoridians.
The Eldoridians, the Eldruads. Are you saying that they just were like insane, like sacrifice worshiping people? Like, what the fuck is this movie trying to tell me? Like, you have Cortez. Why can't Cortez be the bad guy? Like, we all know Cortez was a bad guy. Why do we need why do we need this?
Yeah, agree.
And then, like, just character motivations in this movie didn't make sense. I didn't know I didn't know why Chell wanted gold. It didn't make any sense. You know, her being the person that she is, it would not have mattered to her. I didn't really understand what these guys' plan was, like, to get all of this gold and then get back to Spain. But they didn't have a boat or a ship or anything. So, like, they were going to have then build them a ship. But if these guys, like, these guys were not people that built ships that could get across the fucking ocean, otherwise they would have gotten, like, so much of this movie was just like,
your eyes are bleeding, JPC.
It just grated on me in this impossible way, because I'm like, I don't know what anyone wants, I don't know why anyone exists, and I don't know what anyone is doing. Like, none of it made sense to me.
You're not wrong. You're not crazy, and you're not wrong. It added insult to injury that all the songs were meandering and made no sense and sounded like they were improvised.
And I felt bad for Edward James Olmos because, like, he's in this movie and he's like the chief, and he's, oh boy, I mean, he's a great actor. I love him on Battlestar. But at one point, Edward James Olmos is talking to, I think he's talking to Miguel or he's talking to Tulio, and the guy's like, well, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. And he goes, to err is human. And he kind of gives him a wink. And I'm like, wait, the chief knows that these guys are con artists? Like, yeah. Kill them. These guys are going to steal your wealth, like, to destroy these fucking guys. I was so confused. I was so confused about this whole movie.
Yeah, and it only got worse for me as it went. Like, it got muddier and more confusing. I would say the last third of the movie, I was like, huh? All my notes are, huh? What? What's going on? Ew, they're fucking make it stop.
Aaron, at one point, were they trying to set up like a love triangle between Chell and Miguel and, you know, what's his fuck, Tulio?
You know what? It sounded like, it felt like it was more of a love triangle between Tulio and Miguel. Seems like they had something going on. They almost kissed the entire time. It seemed like, is it Tulio who's Kevin Klein?
Yeah. Tulio, get
Tulio
the fuck.
Is bi, and he is with Chell, and he's with both of them, and they're jealous, and I think that's the issue.
I mean, that would have made more sense to me.
Yeah, here's a better movie, is have the mystical lost or mysterious made-up city of El Dorado be like bisexual acceptance or giving into your bisexuality. Mm-hmm. Then when they go and search for that, you know, it's a way more enjoyable movie and everyone gets what they want. And
if the second half of this movie was just Brokeback Mountain, where like they get shipwrecked on this island and they don't find El Dorado, but they like find each other and like they don't know how to quit
you. I'd love that.
I can't quit you.
Beautiful.
And then the movie Crash wins Best Oscar instead.
No.
Fucking believable. I'll never get over it.
Speaking of lines that I think are directly reminiscent of Hey Riddle Riddle, there's a line where they're walking through the jungle to get to El Dorado, and he says, "Your horse bit me in the butt." And I'm like, I know I have initiated that scene.
I have been in three separate positions. I've initiated that scene. That's been an initiation in a scene I've been in, and I've listened to Adel and JPC each initiate that
scene.
And
it happened to me at a family reunion.
Can I tell you Adel's favorite part of this movie, Aaron?
Yes, of course.
So
it wasn't the burping volcano or the tiny man butt?
No, it wasn't either one of those things. Those were close second and third, but his favorite part of this movie, the evil, you know, shaman wizard guy who's
Armand Asante, which is also my favorite cognac.
Yeah. Armand Asante, who is the evil wizard, is his henchman is like cooking up like a little like potion for him to drink, and he hands it to him, and then he goes, oh, and he takes it back and he puts a little tiki flag in it, and then he hands it back like the tiki drink. And I knew when he handed it to him, I was like, oh yeah, Adel would love to drink that.
100% when that moment happened, I gave a little fist bump, like a little pump in the air of like, yes.
Yeah, I broke my TV. I tried to fist bump my TV and now there's a big hole in it.
I only watch movies 2 inches from the TV like a little kid.
I watched Newsies the first day I watched Newsies. I watched it 3 times and I was like an inch away from the screen and I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I love this.
Yeah, that's why the drywall in my apartment's all fucked up, is because my apartment's my best friend, so I just fist bump it all the time, but I do not have an anger problem. And I don't know why you would fucking bring that up right now.
Oh, no.
Oh God, another hole. This will come as a surprise to no one, but my favorite part was when the horse was drunk. And he was in like the weird trippy mode and was like stumbling. That was my favorite part.
There's also, usually in animated movies with horses, there's also a part where like someone's doing something stupid and the horse is impossibly still. And then it like kicks the shit out of them to where they fly off screen. That also typically happens with the animated horse.
Can someone draw me as a Disney princess, JBC as an animated horse, and Adel as whatever animal sidekick you want, but he just has to be small.
I was the horse. What the fuck?
I know. I would love to be an animated horse.
With the amount of puns you make, do you think you're a silent animated horse, Adel? Come on.
Yes.
The whole like premise of this movie is like predicated on that like white savior thing where like these people like come and they bring them culture and they teach them how to do things right and blah blah blah. The part of it, and all of that obviously bothers me, but the part of it that like bothered me the most was when they're like, hey, like after this basketball game like you guys invented, like you won, so all of these people get sacrificed. And then the Kenneth Branagh's character is like no sacrifices. And then everyone in like the village or whatever is like relieved and happy that they don't have to do the sacrifices anymore. But I'm like, No, like that. They weren't just waiting for some white person to come up and like tell them, like, hey, y'all know that sacrifices don't affect the sun, right? Let me bring you some Jesus. Let me bring you some gold. Let's put a Chili's in here and everything's going to be cool. Like, it sucked that, like, every native character, a quote unquote native character in this movie was just like, yeah,
sure.
Okay.
Wow, is that a guitar? Rock on. I love it. The truest thing about white people is their answer to everything is, let's just get a Chili's in here.
Yeah, airports, let's get a Chili's
too.
Let's just get
a Chili's in here.
And I'm shocked he didn't pick up the guitar when he found it on the street and just start playing like Dave Matthews. Yeah. Like, he sits down, he builds a quad, and then he sits down in the quad and has...
Oh, yeah, I would love that.
All the little kids gather around, and he's going, bam! Bam, bam, bam.
She wakes up in the morning.
And they're like, this is mediocre, but a pretty cool jam band to see in person.
Satellites.
Crash
into me. And it's just Elton John doing a Dennis Matthews impression.
I'd pay for that.
Man, well, we all paid for it in a certain way.
Oh, so, I also pay for Kenneth Branagh to do, like, if they redid Shrek and Kenneth Branagh was Shrek, I'd pay $1 million for that.
Oh shit, yeah, that would be great. Kenneth, again, I do like the talent in this movie.
I love them.
I just don't think that this. I think this movie was so fucking confusing.
This is my yearly reminder to tell Hey Riddle Riddle fans to rewatch the Kenneth Branagh Much Ado About Nothing. It's one of the best movies ever. It's so good.
Can I ask you a question, though, with I guess just like animated movies in general? And I know that this happens, but like the very first scene of this, I was like, this is Aladdin. I'm watching Aladdin in the first scene. It's like this, it's beat for beat. It's like the same shit. So many of these animated movies, it feels like Pixar, DreamWorks, Disney, whatever, they have just like scenes or premises directly lifted from one movie and just placed into the other in a way that makes me feel like it's like super lazy. And then sometimes they'll have movies that are like completely original and I'm like, oh shit, like this is such a fun, cool idea. And it's so like, I felt like Inside Out was that way. When I saw Inside Out, I was like, oh holy shit, like I don't think I've ever seen anything like this. This is wonderful. And then we just watched the new one, Soul. I don't know if you guys have seen Soul, and I'm not gonna give spoilers for that, but when I was watching Soul, I was like, this feels like fucking Inside Out. Like it feels like Coco. Like it feels like two other fucking movies that I've already seen. Like why am I watching?
I think
this?
Most animated films, at least to begin with, or at least like the golden age of Disney, is they're all like lifted templates from existing stories. So even Lion King's just Macbeth. I'm sorry, Lion King's Hamlet.
Totally like, different vibe if it's Macbeth. That's a blast.
So like his dad
out damn Zazu.
His dad dies.
Hyenas are the witches.
Timon and Pumbaa are Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Like yeah. it's like they just slotted in animated animals for Hamlet. So I feel like their whole business is founded on lifted plot lines and stories and templates. So I think the whole business is like, let's lift out this set piece and plop it in here. Let's slot in this storyline between these two from this existing trope. It's all piecemeal. It's all Frankenstein's animation.
In animated movies' defenses, and like Disney Pixar, when you watch movies that don't follow that hero cycle structure very well, or rhythmically don't feel like you're hitting all of those points, it feels really uncomfortable to watch. Like rom-coms that do the best even now still are pretty formulaic because we expect a certain rhythm for something. And then like people hated Brave because we were expecting like a true hero's journey and they went like 5 feet away from where she began and didn't change much. So like I think totally tonally, I think Soul was like way too close to Inside Out. But I think
Aaron,
structure-wise, I can see why they don't try to reinvent the wheel too often.
I think we have a name for our band, which is Totally Tonally.
Here's the thing like about that, because I get that, right? And I think that there's one thing with like taking Shakespeare and putting it into an animated movie, right? Like taking this story structure and putting it, you know, onto that. But that feels like Frankenstein. But then when you're just taking other animated movies and then putting them into your animated movie, it's like, now we've gone too far. Like, we have no more source material. Now it's just like, we're just playing with, like, we're just switching people's arms for legs. And then I have to watch, like, 90 minutes with Kenneth Branagh when he's got legs for arms. And I'm like, what the fuck am I watching?
But his butt like stays the same size.
It's so tiny. It's so tiny.
Steal like an artist, baby. Yeah, I feel like all the stories have been told, and now it's just, like, cross-pollination. Like, I don't think, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, in some ways, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to criticize the whole fucking industry, but it feels lazy to just say, like, everything's already been done. And it's like, well.
Well, here's what I'll say.
No.
Here's what I'll say. Everything that has been a proven success has been a proven success. So surely they can make a movie where it's like exactly El Dorado, but 15 minutes in, Tulio and the other guy just get eaten by that shark that ate the bird
right,
in the beginning. They get eaten by that shark, and holy shit, now the next 85 minutes are that horse's journey. And isn't that incredible? But kids are going to cry, parents are going to storm out of the theater and write Disney emails. So I feel like they bank off, they have a chart, like a serial killer chart with red string, where they're like, what are the formulas that have brought in the most bank for box office? And let's play it as safe as possible with our own overlay. So it's not that everything's been done. It's like, there's been so much done, and here's a small target that's been a huge success, and so we're just going to circle that drain.
Adel, that brings me to like a great point, because you said parents would email Disney, and this is a DreamWorks movie. I think it would be so fucking phenomenal if DreamWorks made a movie like that, where it was just like bad and shitty, and like something bad happened, and at the end they were just like, Disney.
And that guy just would do that. They're psychos over at DreamWorks.
Stop at Disney for that.
I think that with the best movies now, and the ones that I think are connecting to audiences and feeling original, like Inside Out, is they go, you know what we're going to do? We're only going to break one big rule. We're going to pick one thing, one story structure, plot, idea. We're going to break that one rule, and then everything else is going to make sense and be a, if this is true, what else is true? And we'll stay to the story structure the rest of the time. Like, I feel like with Inside Out, having it be like a buddy movie, a buddy like journey movie within the actual hero's journey, which is Riley, is a big rule breaking. But they stayed true to a hero's journey cycle for Riley, and they stayed true to like a buddy travel movie within, with sadness and joy. So like, you got to do one, you got to break one rule.
It all comes back to Joseph Campbell, baby. This is a great teachable moment to remind everyone who watched this movie and didn't enjoy it. The greatest animated movie of all time just came out 2 years ago. It's called Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. It is the most amazing animated film. And
was
one
that
of the
2 years ago?
One of the best just overall movies of all time. The What's Up Danger moment in that gives me absolute goosebumps.
Yeah.
I think that's in my top five favorite movies ever.
I would say
Into the Spider-Verse is probably the best animated movie I've seen in the last like 10 years for sure.
It's one of the best. Yeah. Like Aaron said, one of the best movies I've seen in the last 50 years. I'm 51.
Let me ask you this. Hey, happy birthday.
I didn't say that.
About Road to El Dorado specifically. Because I had a lot of time. I had 90 minutes while watching this movie. Actually, I had to pause to go get groceries in the middle of watching this movie. So I had some extra time to ponder it. Lucky
you,
me.
You didn't have to pause. You got to pause.
Luckily I got to step away. But I was thinking about it, like, what would I have done differently if I had just kind of the same components of this movie? What could I have changed or fucked around with that would make it a better movie? And I think I would have liked, a little more, maybe as far as like motivation, like character motivation goes for both of them. I think it would have been more interesting to see these like two con artists who are, you know, they're down on their luck. They got like that, you know, they got imprisoned on a boat for sneaking onto a boat, even though it was an accident. They have no money. They're, you know, they're nowhere close to Spain anymore. I would have loved for them maybe to like, you know, I think is it the Dances with Wolves thing where instead of like instead of like trying to exploit the native people, maybe they like white savior and come to their aid. I think I would have even enjoyed that more than just watching a movie where they white savior and steal from them. Like, yeah. I think maybe if they had like joined forces to stop Cortez and like we could paint Cortez as the villain,
that
could have been a more fun movie.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Adel.
I think 100% when you first said that, you nailed it. And to me, the best way to make this movie good or even great is exactly what you said. Make Cortez the villain. So what happens is they stumble upon the people who live in El Dorado. They like get to know their culture. They like befriend them and stuff. And then what's his name? Cortez comes solo and is like, I'm coming back with my army. Then he leaves and I'm fucking stealing from a movie. Then it becomes like Three Amigos, where they're like, Ewoks. It becomes like, what does everyone in this town do well? And yeah. then they work together and they protect the land or the hidden secret of the gold together. And then Cortez's army comes back and he's the bad guy the whole time. I think that's brilliant. And like you said, I don't see the reason to have this evil guy and all this like bullshit where they step in to stop like barbaric rituals, because that just seems...
Because Cortez is also, they introduce him very first in the movie. He like spills some water on his armor. Why he's drinking a cup of water at that point, I have no fucking idea. But it's like, that's Cortez. They give us the bad guy up front. He's evil on the ship, and he also is like, he's got some like weird Christian vibes going on with him too, because he's like, it's God's grace that brought you here. Now you'll take God's punishment, you heathens. And it's like, okay, Cortez, calm down.
Aaron, what were you going
to
say?
I was going to, it's very similar to what you said. I just think we didn't need that extra villain there, and we didn't have to make it white savior at all. It would have been so cool if they had protected and saved those two guys, and because of their kindness, like, those two guys are able to be gay there. be together in El Dorado.
is that kind of, now I'm also misremembering it, but isn't that kind of like Avatar where... Because he's not really like the white savior, because he joins the Na'vi and they're like, you don't know how to do shit. And like they help him out kind of in that movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of movies that kind of like broke the mold and kind of did their own thing, like Avatar, I guess it's a James Cameron movie. And like he, at that point in his career, he could have done anything he fucking wanted to. But that movie is still like the second highest grossing movie of all time still. So...
Yeah, that has a little bit of like Pocahontas influence and like
Fern Gully a little bit too.
Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Fuck James Cameron?
Yeah, fuck him.
Why?
He's fuck fucking him. Terrible. Fuck that
Titanic?
Guy. He's horrible.
As like rich people go, they could all get fucked, but he seems like one of the better ones.
No, he's terrible.
There was room for both of them on that door.
Yeah, he wouldn't let Leonardo DiCaprio on the door, dude.
I heard that on set he killed Leo because he was jealous.
Do you know that was a documentary? He made that Titanic sink and all those people died.
Have you seen Billy Zane since?
Good question.
Huh?
No,
what
Billy
about
Zane...
Kathy Bates? That's what I thought.
At the end of Titanic, James Cameron took Billy Zane, picked him up, and tossed him into the ocean.
But in his defense, that's how, like, that's a good luck thing. If Billy Zane's on your movie at the end of shooting, you toss him into the ocean, and wherever shore he washes up next, that's what movie he gets to be in.
Yeah, and at the beginning of any movie that you do with Billy Zane, you're supposed to take a full bottle of champagne and crack it against his head.
Against his mast.
Yeah,
his mast,
against his mast. Center mast. Aim for center mast and then crack him with
the shit I've ever heard in my life. Ow!
Well,
bon voyage!
This has been The Road to El Dorado. We hope you enjoyed the review, even if you didn't enjoy the movie. And if you love the movie, which a lot of you do, sorry. We just didn't. Maybe it's something where if, like, I totally understand if you grew up watching it, maybe there's like a affinity towards it. But yeah, I didn't. I love the banter. But I didn't care for the movie.
Just watch Emperor's New Groove and go to bed. I'd give this a 2 out of 10. Adel, what would you give it?
I'll say a 3 out of 10. A 3 out of 10.
Cool. JPC?
I would say that this movie is a good movie to watch and remember that, yeah, the world was like also really fucked up and bad before 9/11. Like, it didn't... It didn't change that much.
And Casey, like, can you just slowly fade this rant out?
This movie sucks. I give it a 1 out of 10. It sucks. It sucks. It's bad. I think that there are just better... Like, go watch Aladdin. Like, Aladdin has its problems, but it's at least better than this.
Reviews of El Dorado don't burn at that temperature. Aaron,
what's up?
Speaking of lost mystical areas or places in the world that we've yet to discover, aren't you still on the quest for a certain place?
Oh yeah, I'm on the quest. I'm on the road to Kanye West. Good night, everybody.
Aaron, Aaron, I'm gonna let you finish.
You got some gold. Just sneeze.
Guess who's back to give the credit to try another show that was hosted by Adam Rafi, Aaron Keefe, JPC, Jake the Snake, and Bill Nye. Wait, no, I'm sorry, those two were lies. Casey Tony edited the show just for you. Ooh, and Arnie Parrott wrote the theme you're listening to. Ooh, he wrote this extra line that he will not need to use. Oh well, that was Hey Riddle Riddles. Review.